Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, all you radio listeners out there in internet land. This is Third and Long with Coach Penn. Tonight we have a really big show scheduled for you. I spent the last week and a half researching as much as I could on the championship games this weekend. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is championship game weekend in the IWFL and the NWFA. They both scheduled their championship games on the same weekend, so us, the fans, are the winners this weekend. We have lots of good football to either go see and or hear. Once again, I'm Coach Penn. This is my weekly radio show, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, every Wednesday night, where we'll discuss all forms of football. Right now, we're focusing on women's football, and the season is closing out, a sad end to another great season. 2008, as of Saturday, will be over. And what did you do this season? Were you satisfied with what you accomplished and everything like that? I know I was pretty satisfied with the season that my team had. We had a great year. But championship weekend is all about the teams that have busted their butts and done everything it took and actually got to the championship game. Those contenders are the Chicago Force and the Dallas Diamond in the Tier 1 IWFL championship game, the Clarksville Fox and the Montreal Blitz for the Tier 2 IWFL championship game, and the H-Town Cyclones and the Western Michigan Mayhem for the NWFA. So all through the show, I will not be doing a call-in segment for the listeners out there tonight. You are able to call in whenever you want. If you're listening online right now, you can see a chat available button. Go ahead and push that. You'll hop in the chat room right there, and you can throw some questions at me there, or you can dial the number, which is at the top, 347-826-7278. Pop in the chat room first and let us know the last four digits so we can figure out who is calling and what you want to say, and then we'll plug you on through. So at any point during my little spiel about the games, you can interject and say, hey, this is my opinion, this is what I think, or where'd you get that from? Stuff like that, you know. I'm always open to constructive criticism and others' opinions. These are all of my opinions, and everything that I have gathered, I'm sharing with you. As a coach, I spend so much time breaking down film, watching football, just analyzing everything I see and hear about football. This year is a great year for women's football. I've seen a lot of good football in both leagues, but I am in the IWFL. And coach of the California Quake, and we finished the season 8-0 and then lost to Dallas in the playoffs. And I've seen some really good football and some really good heart and effort left out on the field this year, so I'm proud to be a member of women's football. Lots to cover tonight. Towards the end of the show, Matt Coach, head coach of the Western Michigan Mayhem, will be calling in. So until then, I will be going on and on, rattling off my opinion on what each team needs to do to secure a victory and bring home the trophy. Because Coach was supposed to send in a DVD to me. He's been so overwhelmed with getting ready for the championship game that he forgot, and I understand. It's a busy week, and I wasn't his number one priority. I'm very few people's number one priority, and I accept that. I'm okay with it. But I wanted to give him the opportunity to talk about his team instead of me blithering off of stats and basing it off of that. So the only two teams I hadn't seen on film or in person are the Western Michigan Mayhem and the Montreal Blitz. But before I just delve right into breaking down the championship games, I have to veer off onto a tangent because I have some major complaints out there. There is a lot of women's football being played. Thank you, BJ. There's a lot of women's football being played, and that seems to be the priority for a lot of teams. The teams that are in the championship games deserve to be there because they've played good football. But there needs to be more happening than that. If this movement we have created called women's football wants to grow and get recognized, we need to act professional, organized, and be competitive. There are teams out there that are only focused on being competitive and winning games. every team in every league has to come off as professional, organized, and competitive. Just because you bring home a trophy does not make you a championship team. It makes you a championship football team, but it is not a championship organization and team. We need websites to be updated. We need information to be available on your websites. We need you to submit your stats to your leagues. The leagues have these great stat programs, and, you know, not all of the teams are using them. And teams should return phone calls or emails when they're submitted. I mean, how hard is it to return an email? I think, you know, in this day and age, a lot of people don't like to talk on the phone. And we're so consumed with technology that texting is taking over for talking. Well, guess what? Email is even easier than texting because you have a whole keyboard and not just 9 numbers to pick out a statement. So, I mean, I find it just ridiculous that people can't return phone calls, emails. It's just, you know, I try to find out a lot of stuff about some of the teams, and I contacted the teams. So I thank those teams that responded, and I appreciate it. And it will represent very well today on what I've learned about your team. But let me just say this. Both leagues are doing a very good job of trying to build women's football up into being something. I am biased because I am in the IWFL, and I think they are the better league right now. I'm sure both leagues are doing some things better than the other league. Like me, I like the way the stat program is shown on the NWFA website, but I hate the NWFA website. So there are things that, you know, both leagues could do better, but it is up to the individual teams to step it up. They need to put the information out there so that people, when they hear about a team, can go to the leagues and go to the websites and say, wow, this looks good. They got their stuff together. No, I don't think so. It's not enough. You need to not only play football, but you need to be surrounded by people who will help, support, and are into the sport as much as you are. Just because you're volunteering doesn't mean you're doing enough. Everybody out there in women's football is dedicating time, money, sacrificing time and the chance to earn money to do this. I mean, everybody has agreed to do this. You volunteered. Nobody's forcing you to do this. If you're going to do this or attempt to do this, do it the right way so that the system and the idea of women's football can keep moving forward. I don't get how you can just sit back and say, well, I don't have time to do this. You know what? You can't do it alone. If you don't have enough friends or know enough people that are organized and good with time management and have some skill set that you need, then you don't need to be running a team. You do not need to be organizing something that fulfills dreams when the dream is going to end when you are fed up. That's not right. Everybody needs to do this. I mean, you need to have people that have great organizational skills and very exceptional time management skills. During the season, I spent 6 days a week on football. Yes, I have a full-time job. Yes, I have a relationship. But 6 days was spent on football. We had practice 3 nights a week, which is, I think, one more than what most teams do. Most teams practice twice a week. We also had film twice a week. One night was for the players. The other night was for the coaches. And then, of course, you have game day. So, I mean, 6 days of the week, you know, Friday was my only free day to basically, you know, go out, get some food, enjoy my night away from football, you know. And it only takes an hour to do stats. And if you're watching film, you can do stats. So I don't understand why teams aren't putting the coach in charge of doing stats, because they have to watch film. And if they're not watching film, they're not a real coach. Because the only way a team is going to get better is to watch film and scout the team ahead of you and fix the mistakes you make. Because it's not about what you do right. It's about fixing what you do wrong. So it's just, that was me venting right there. And sorry to have done that, but, I mean, for those of you listening, you know what it's about. It's about women's football taking it to the next level. And right now, it's not doing it because there are several teams in each league not doing their part They're just saying, you know what, we're out here to play football. We put a website up there. You can find our roster and our schedule and our home field and all that fun stuff, but that's it. So don't get it. Don't like it. Get on the ball, people, especially if you're in the championship games. If you're out there and you don't update your website regularly and you're a championship playing team, that's just sad. I mean, I don't know. I expect more from those teams. You guys should represent everything there is to be. Everybody should want to be you, not just because you're a winning football team. Wow, they did this, so they're a great team. We want to be them. No, they don't do this well. They just play good football, you know, and that's only a part, a little piece of the puzzle that we need to do. All right, so enough with that. Thank you for listening. If you have any comments about that, you know, call in and say, what are you talking about? You're speaking out of your ass, you know. Numbers 347-826-7278. Hop on the little chat available. Throw me some comments if you like. But back to the upcoming weekend. All the games will be broadcast. You can actually go to wfbtalk.wordpress.com. That's the ladies' site that they blog on, and they actually have links on there to all the broadcasts for the championship games this weekend. So if you have plans on Saturday and they can't be in Chicago or Memphis, you know, just hop on their site, say, okay, let me figure out my game plan for listening to these games. Check it out there. I might actually be on the radio for the Clarksville-Montreal game. Got a call from the league today, and I am attending the IWFL championship game, so I will be there. I'm flying out on Friday, and then have lots to do on Saturday. The league called me today, and they asked for some help with some things, and that might include announcing or being a color or play-by-play for the Tier 2 championship game. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be fun. I did that on the first Detroit-Atlanta game in 2006. I had a good time with that, and then I actually announced the WPFL championship between Dallas and the Northern Ice a couple years ago. So this will be my fourth and fifth championship game that I've been to, because I was actually at the Quake and Jacksonville Dixie Blues first one back in 2001. So looking forward. I've been around football for a while, and it's fun. I love it. I mean, football's a great sport, and to see women with the desire in their eyes to play is just too cool. So let's dive right in. The first game I'm going to try and break down is going to be Clarksville and Montreal. Now, this game is going to be really easy to break down because Montreal is one of those teams I'm talking about. Their website is very generic. They don't have a lick of information out there. And so I thought I'd be really smart, and I'd go, well, let's go to all the people they've played this year and check out and see what they've done. Well, every single game they've played don't do any recaps for games either. So I have a roster for Montreal. And based off that roster, they have an advantage because they have more people. Doesn't look like they're bigger or taller or anything like that. They just look like they have more people to rotate. They only have one QB listed, and that is Sadia Ashraf, and I think she's the owner, too. So I believe I called and left a message for her. She never got back to me, but number 16 is a QB. So everything that I see from the Montreal Blitz on Saturday will be new, and then I'll be able to basically break down what happened during those championship games because I will have been there. And that'll be one less team I'll have to just guess on. And I'm sure she'll find me and say, oh, yeah, heard about your radio show. You're referring to us? Well, I don't have the time. And I can, you know, break down that little speech I just gave you to her. The Clarksville Fox, on the other hand, I actually got to watch a tape. The tape against Chicago. And Pops was nice enough to tell me that that was probably the worst game I could have watched to get a feel for them. But truthfully, and I am honest and blunt, so don't take anything personal out there. Clarksville looks like a first-year team. This was several games into the season. Let me see, to be specific. When they played Chicago, they were 5-0, and they ended up losing 40-0. And the big thing that stands out to me is that Clarksville had a negative 2 yards total for the game. So for me watching the film, it looked like Clarksville has some ballers. It just looks like they're a first-year team. They have lots of speed. They play a 6 two defenses, basically a 4-4, and they walk up their outside linebackers. It's really unique in the fact that they do have two linebackers, they have one safety, two corners, and like most teams in the league, everybody's a predominantly run-first team. So their outside linebackers walk up and basically play like defensive ends, but they don't always, you know, come across the line of scrimmage. They sit back and they read the play, and sometimes they blitz. When it is a pass, they drop into coverage. And that's one of the strong suits I saw, is that they recognize pass and run really quick, and those outside linebackers get into their zones to cover their people very well. But they were fast on offense and defense. I mean, Chicago did not outrun them at any point. They basically just out-muscled them and proved that they've been playing football for a long time. Number two for Clarksville, let me get her name real quick. That's Starry Beatty, or Batty. Wow, she's fast. She is really fast. She is a wide receiver, and one of the things they try to do with her is they line her up as a receiver, and the quarterback takes a snap and then just takes one step and throws it out to her. I mean, it's basically just a quick hitch route. I mean, she doesn't even go anywhere. It's just she turns, catches the ball, tries and puts a move, and goes. Chicago did a good job of recognizing this after they got beat the first time. They caught the first one, got 5 yards. She made one person miss, and the other person got there and made the tackle. But the quarterback is, where'd her name go? It's Lori Roberson, number 13. They have Missy Darland listed on the thing as the only quarterback on the team, but statistically, Lori's the only one that's been playing. She looks like she can throw downfield, but throwing side to side, I would not be confident throwing side to side if I was that coach. So what I do is I would say, you know, work the Starry downfield and have her use her advantage there, because if Montreal's not as fast, I mean, because I'm sure they have game film, whereas I don't, I believe that's an advantage they may have. The one thing I am disappointed I will not get to see is Amberlee Shirella, number 21, the middle linebacker. I believe she is no longer on the team because she got shipped out for military duty. Watching her on film, holy cow, she looked good. She was fast. She chased down, like, I believe it was Melissa Smith, busted through number 87, their rookie sensation running back, Chicago's, busted through on the outside, and Shirella was actually the other side of a field linebacker. You know, she had the opposite B-gap, and 87 just came down the corner on the other side, and she was gone. Nobody was anywhere near, and 21 just came out of nowhere and dragged her down, and I was like, wow. And I also saw her make some great hits, and her pursuit angles were wonderful, so I'm kind of disappointed that she won't be there. And I'm wondering how Clarksville will make up for that, because she looked like the star on defense on the film that I saw. On offense, they I'll just kill this name, so I'll just call her Miss Suttles. Miss Suttles is their primary running back. She's got some good numbers on the year, but they are not a one running back team. They actually have three running backs that can carry the rock. Suttles is number one. Then Natalie Hall is another running back, and then they also have nicknamed Nell Lemon. That's number 5, number 23, and number 1. Those are the three running backs. And they did try to get Starry the ball a couple times on, like, end arounds or wide receiver reverses, whatever you want to call them. They look like a fast team, and their offense is very simple. They usually line up in twins, and for those of you who don't know what twins are or refer to it as another name, it's two receivers to one side and a tight end on the other. The backfield was either in I or in pro set, which is split backs. They didn't do anything fancy. They basically ran leads, sweeps, and dives. But the film that I saw, they were just outmanned against Chicago. And it's not to say that Clarksville isn't a very good team, because they're obviously in the Tier 2 championship game. So they've done some great things on the schedule. I'm just demolishing most of the teams they played them. The close game they had was 12-6 against the Wisconsin Warriors. And that was a Tier 1 team that they beat away. So very good there. And then in the playoffs, they just killed the New England Intensity. I think the New England Intensity only had 12 yards total offense. So they got a defense to boot. Their defense actually played very fast. They were just outmanned. It only looked like they had 20 people, maybe less, at the Chicago Force game. So, and I know they have, I believe it's 35 or 29. Let me see real quick. They have 29 people on their roster with 21 outs. That makes it 28. So, and then the Montreal team has 39 people on their roster. So I'm anxious to see how many people they bring, because if they bring that many, that's a big advantage. And I'm not sure what the weather's going to be like this weekend, but as proven in Dallas when the Quake went there, weather can be a factor. The only team home this weekend is Chicago. Whether they're listed as the away team or not, they're home. The weather in that city is going to be an advantage for them if it's out of the norm. I don't know what Chicago's praying for. Maybe cold and blustery. If they better call me and let me know, because I need to know to bring some jeans and some sweats, because all I have planned is the shorts and a T-shirt. I guess I better hop on weather.com, huh? Anybody that lives in Chicago that's listening, call me. Let me know what the weather is like in Chicago this weekend. Let's see. That's basically all I found for Chicago. You know, good defense, very quick defense. They basically bunch up the line and say, you know, we're going to beat you at the point of attack, and which they have been very successful. You know, one loss this year. Montreal has one loss this year, too, and that was to the Boston Militia, who was a very good team. Boston Militia had the chance to make the playoffs. So I would not underestimate the Blitz. I would just say that they're a good football team, and they don't know how to handle the internet, or maybe technology. I don't know. They're from Canada. And I'm not saying anything bad about Canada, but, you know, I've never been there, and I think Chicago's the closest I will ever be there. They did happen to lose to Boston, but scored 20 points on Boston, a Tier 1 team. So that's pretty pretty acceptable right there, you know, to battle a top Tier 1 team to a 10-point loss, you know, at Boston. So I think Montreal's got a game. Got a game to play, and it'll be exciting. I can't wait to see what they're about. That's Montreal, you know. I don't really have anything on them at all. I think something to mention, though, the IWFL games that we're going to be seeing, I think officials are going to be huge, because what I saw on the Clarksville-Chicago game, the officials did not know the rules. First off, one of the things, the Chicago field looks really nice. The actual playing condition looks really nice. But it's a baseball field, all right? At one end, it's a baseball field, and they have a portable goal post that, you know, you bring in. And I thought that was kind of bad. And, the field looks really nice, and there's only stands on one side, as commented on the message boards. It only seats 3,000. I was like, first of all, if I see 3,000 people there, I am going to be super psyched, just because I've never seen 3,000 people, much less 1,000 at a women's football game. And I was at that first championship game, and they reported like 750 people there, and I was like, that's not 750 people. Remember, if you have any comments on the Clarksville or Montreal game, you know, hop in the chat room, give me the last four digits of your phone number, and I can, you know, put you on through. And maybe you've seen Montreal play. If you have some of the opponents out there, you know, the Holyoke Hurricanes, Manchester Freedom, the Intensity, Southern Maine Rebels, anybody from the Boston Militia or the Carolina Phoenix. Carolina Phoenix actually played up pretty tight, you know. 41-27, that sounds like a good game. I would have liked to have seen that game. If anybody out there is listening, you know, and has some information on Montreal, you know, hop on. Give a call. 347-826-7278. Other than that, back to the officials. Yeah, the officials at that game did not know what they were doing. I saw not as in throwing penalties or calling things. I mean, they did a good job officiating. They just didn't know the rules very well. So I'm anxious to see what hashes they use for the game. I'm anxious to see, do they know a safety comes out to the 35-yard line as a kickoff out of bounds? Because they put the kickoff out of bounds. I think Chicago kicked it out of bounds, and they put the ball at the 40. I'm like, no, it goes to 35. And just little things like that. I mean, that's the consistency I have seen all year. There is none. Every single official does what they want. The IWFL gives out a piece of paper with the discrepancies from the NFL. And our rule book is basically a copy of the college football rules. So I think that's funny that we would give them the discrepancies from the NFL. So every game we would add little things that we found in the rule book, and we would hand a sheet to the official saying, here are the things that we've had problems with this year. So I'm bringing that with me, and I can't wait to maybe talk to or, you know, influence some of the officials just so that we can get some uniformity. All I know is that if they use the outside hashes, the high school hashes, Dallas has a huge advantage, as they are much faster than Chicago. Speaking of Dallas and Chicago, let's move on to their first. Sorry, I had to get a drink, a little parched. I'll start with Chicago. That was the game I watched today. I'm very familiar with them. I refreshed it. I watched it a couple weeks ago. Chicago is about as simplistic as you can be on offense. They usually run a base formation, two wide receivers, tight end, two running backs. Rarely did I see them out of that formation. The thing I was impressed with is that they pull a lot of people, and it's not misdirection pulling. On my team, when we pull somebody, it's usually because we're running a misdirection, and we're trying to get people out of place and put somebody on their ass and open up a hole. They don't seem to do that. They run like a delayed lead, and they pull opposite guard tackle. And I was like, wow, they can actually get there? And they did get there a couple times against the Fox, but the Fox started shutting that down, and then I didn't really see it most of the rest of the game. But I was pretty shocked at, you know, pulling opposite side. Like, everybody would slant right, and the two pulls would come go left. And I was like, geez, that's a hard thing to block. But, you know, women's football, the defensive line is usually slow to get off the ball. So if you can take advantage of that, that's really good coaching right there. And based on their stats, they are predominantly a running team. Number 15, Christophe, is their quarterback. And she, I was not impressed with her throws during that game. She made a couple very good throws off of play action. But her drop back, she never seemed to be balanced or have, you know, that center of gravity that a quarterback needs. And a couple times she was under some duress and pressure. And she probably didn't throw it the best she could off her foot. But, you know, I just wasn't impressed with the throwing ability. She did throw a couple, like I said, they were play action. And I think the women's football, the best you can do is play action. If the quarterback can get over, you know, am I going to get hit immediately? So, Christophe is their quarterback, number 15. She's usually going to look to hand it off. And the people she's going to look to hand it off to is number 87, Melissa Smith. Primary number one. She's a very good running back. I was very impressed. It's very weird to see 87 running in the backfield because that's a receiver number. But, I mean, my sister wore 99, so I guess, you know, 87 is not that different. At least 87 is a normal eligible number. But 87, she doesn't necessarily have football moves. Being a rookie, I can see that she's kind of developing. But she can run, and she knows how to run. She's not afraid to just say, you know what, say hello to my shoulder. It's going to be in your chest. And next thing you're going to do is be on the floor. So she runs very hard, is a load to bring down. I mean, she's listed as, where is it? Oh, she's not listed. Oh, well. She just has 0 inches height. That's another thing. I mean, half of Chicago's roster, everybody's 0 inches tall and they don't weigh anything. So that wasn't updated, and I really couldn't get a feed for that. So Melissa Smith is the main threat. That's who you want to key on. And their offense, you really can't key based on their formation. Which way they're going too much. They're just basically looking to run. Melissa's following number 38, which is Bridget Farner. She's the fullback, and a very good fullback at that. She loves to hit people. She does carry the ball every now and again, but I think her main passion is to run people over and say, follow me. Come on, Melissa. I'm running this way. You better be right on my butt. When they do look to pass, they're looking for number 17, Brandi Serta. She is an all-star on that team. And from what I saw on film, she does look really good. The big matchup, I think, is going to be with the tight end because they do like to use their tight end. And they the way that Dallas has played defense, you know, you have this basic I formation, which we ran. We ran the I formation against Dallas, and we actually blocked it pretty well. I mean, we got positive yards. We averaged with our main running back 5 yards a carry. Actually, it was like 6, I think. I think it's the big key is going to be how they block number 47. Welter is tiny, 5'2", 130. But if you judge her based on her size, you are going to get beat. And I think that number 83 and 85, Kimberly Marks and Shannon Tenbrock, are going to have a challenge in front of them. If they can get 47 blocked, they will have a chance to grind the game out like they want, because this team is a grinding team. As you can see, the most amount of points they put out this season was 40, and that was on a Tier 2 team. I'm not saying I'm not impressed with Chicago's offense, because they don't lose the game. They don't make mistakes. They just work the ball and try and play in field position. But against Dallas, you got to score. I understand your defense is good, and I understand that's your key to winning all these games. But Dallas is going to get theirs. I mean, they have so many people, and they rotate. I mean, I'm looking at the rosters here, and I thought Dallas had a lot of people on the roster. Chicago has like 15 more people than Dallas. And Dallas just rotates, and there's no drop-off at all. So you got this base offense running against a 3-4 defense and with just phenomenal linebackers on the Dallas side. And the speed of the Diamonds is probably going to surprise the Force, because the Force said that Pittsburgh had a couple people that were really fast, and I've seen a lot of the Pittsburgh film. And a couple of the receivers look fast, but nobody else. They look like they were another grinded-out team, with Horton, Superwoman, being their go-to person. I mean, she was just instrumental in everything that they did, and when they lost her, it was hard for them to do anything else. But some other people you're looking at on offense is going to be, got Melissa Smith, and you have number 42. Where's 42 at? Oh, Marcy Myers. When they get close to the goal line, that's what they try to do. They go double tight, which is two tight ends, and they go power eye, which means two fullbacks and a tailback. And what they do is they put 87 and 38 up front, and they put 42 in the back. Now, 42 is not listed as well, but 42, I think, is the smallest of the three, because 38 and 87 are like two fullbacks running downfield. And then 42 is like a little bit smaller fullback running downfield. So when they are getting close to the goal line, and I'm pretty sure what they ran the 2 weeks in a row, two-point conversions, are power eye, we're running this way. And they run whatever way the power eye is set off to, because you think eye formation, stacked backs, and then the power back is either to the right or to the left. And whatever way that back is, that's the way they're running. Now, once you bite on that, they are going to bust out with play action, because that's what they did to the Clarksville. They basically ran one play, and they said, oh, we didn't get in. Wow. And they said, well, let's line up at the same thing, play action fake, tight end, wide open in the end zone. And it worked. So you can't be deceived by their mentality to run, and let's run some more. They will. They're not afraid to throw. They did actually run some doubles, and doubles is two receivers on each side. And when they are in doubles, they are looking to pass. They did try to run out of it just a couple times, but they're looking to pass. I mean, most of the plays that I saw out of them in doubles was pass. Grisafi, she likes to throw right. I don't think I ever saw her look left when they were in doubles. So, and I think Serta was lined up on the right, so that's who they were looking to throw to. And the three passes I saw on one drive were all to the right, and I think they were all to Serta, and all three were caught. So that's something that Dallas has to do. And throwing right means you're throwing at number 21. 21 is Dallas's Jennifer Farrell. They have two really, really good corners, 24 and 21. 24 is Alberta Fitcher-Beardson, and she, I would say, is the weaker. And I think she gets more of the kudos, which is funny to me, because 21 is bigger and stronger than 24. And 5'8", 145, compared to 5'5", 145. And I don't think 24 is 5'5". She didn't look that big in person. But 21 did. I mean, the receiver that lined up on her was ours 5'4", 140, and she's like, she was huge. And I was like, yeah, so 5'8", 145, I think, is underestimating her, and she is a very physical corner, something that it takes. So that's a good matchup right there. If we have Serta on Farrell, that should be a good matchup all day. Be one to watch, because you can throw on Dallas. They are so aggressive at the line of scrimmage with their DBs that you can throw on them if you can get the protection.
get the protection, take out the blitzes, and get those linebackers to bite. There's lots of holes all over the field. It's one thing I saw on them. On defense, Chicago brings a plethora of linebackers, and they are good. They are very good. They're not only good, they tackle well, they hit hard. They're not the fastest I've seen, and I think that's really going to hurt them. But as long as football's assignment football, so if they can play their assignment, they should be fine. On defense, they have, let's see, Jessica McGeek. She's an outside linebacker. She wears 89. See her name pop up a lot in the recaps. Then we got, where's the other ones? The big one is Pam Schraff. Yeah. Just going to leave it. Pam, sorry about your name. You're good. Okay, I'll leave it at that. And then there's just so many other names that I could just go off on because they had so many listed. And watching on film, I was just very impressed with their linebackers. Their linebackers move very well, shed blocks, and get to the ball. They recognize the plays very well, and they kind of, you know, they play smart football, whereas Dallas plays aggressive football. So I like the fact that Chicago's defense should keep them in this game for a while. It's the really thing for Dallas to for Chicago to concentrate on is make sure that their offense is moving the ball, putting Dallas in dire situations, and put some points on the board. If you get in field goal range, you better take some points. Don't go for it. I mean, you need to put points on the board and keep the pressure on Dallas to score because they haven't been pressured all year. Dallas has – they're the only team in the league that hasn't played down to an opponent. I remember on their coach's show, I was watching Coach Hughes' show, and he actually said that they underestimated Kansas City the second time they played them, and that their schedule was all messed up, and they didn't get to warm up the right way, and everything was different, and so they kind of were out of sorts. I'm sorry, 28-13, and the game wasn't even that close. Kansas City scored on an interception return for a touchdown when they were about ready to score, and then they scored right at the end of the game, after they had, like, I think 9 downs because they kept on – Dallas kept on getting a pass interference or something to get an automatic first down, and I just thought it was hilarious. You know, they had so many chances to score from the 5-yard line, and they took them, like, 3 minutes. So the game was not close. They only scored 28, their lowest output of the season, but they're the only team that hasn't played down to the level of their opponent, and I think that's going to be very important for Chicago to play up to their level. They need to play a great game to have a chance. I'm not predicting Dallas to win because, you know, anything can happen on any game depending on where your mindset is because football is a big mindset game. The numbers and names to worry about on Dallas, they're long, but start off with QB, Karen Seemers. She is a veteran, and she is a smart veteran. She actually spent a year coaching last year and came back to play. She is a smart person. If you line up out of sorts, you will get beat because she knows how to audible and make adjustments. Her backup is not, you know, exactly a backup either. She used to play for the Houston Energy and start for them. Her name is Laura Cantu. She's, you know what, it's funny because Seemers is listed as 5'10", 180, and then Cantu is listed as 5'7", 160. Well, Cantu looks bigger on the field than Karen does. So she's a running quarterback, but she also can throw. So Dallas is a running team, and they've never been, like, pressured to do anything all year. They've basically just gone through the motions and been a workhorse-type team. When they look to hand the ball off, they are looking to either hand the ball off to number 46, Jessica Springer, or they're looking to follow Jessica Springer. That is the defensive key for Chicago, is to find Springer if she's on the field and know that the ball is either going to her or it's going behind her. She's either blocking for the person getting the ball or she's getting the ball. The timing of this offensive snap is huge. They are such a well-oiled machine that everything happens so smoothly. They got called for a lot of penalties against the Seattle game because they tend to get in the back because everything they try and do is outside. And once you try and go outside and get shut that down, they bust it right up the middle with big number 82. I believe I referred to her as a walking house. That got a few chuckles. Rachel May is big. She knows how to run. Because she is so tall, she doesn't, you know, get low and run you over. She just uses her leg strength to carry you and then put a knee in your chin. So on offense, find Springer. Springer's not on the field. They're basically easy to figure out. They line up, and I can basically call, because I've seen so much film on them, I can tell you the play they're going to run when they line up. I mean, there's one of two plays coming every time they line up, because they line up in trips or doubles, or they only have so many options based on the formation they can do. They did institute a couple formations against Seattle that I had not seen. So the shotgun with two backs, that can lead to a read option, or, you know, the Texas read option made famous by Vince Young. So I think they were probably setting that up for this game. I would expect that, especially with Springer, and they do try and run the option some. But their offense is very simple. It's not hard to break down. You just have to be able to stay disciplined and don't get tricked, because as soon as you overcompensate for them trying to go outside, they're going to come back with that trap. And then as soon as you start piling everybody in the middle, they're going to start throwing. 87 is a receiver for them, and Yumiki Webb, she is pretty fast. I don't think she was faster than our DB, but they run so much. Our DBs were looking to, you know, secure that outside corner, and little play action here, and she's gone. She's by you. You know, you got to keep your safety. Heads up. What's going on? Dallas defense, it all starts with Lakeisha Bowman. Her and Springer are their main people. But to me, just like on offense, 82 is the difference maker. 47, Jennifer Welter, is the difference maker on defense for them. If you can get her blocked, you can actually secure a whole end, because she is the outside on one side. She's on top of the tight end. She kind of chips the tight end and then reads the play. She's either coming or she's staying, but the strong safety, or Rover that I call, she's covering the tight end, and they can be passed on. They're so aggressive. They read run and react to the run because they want to shut down the run. Lots of holes opened up. I mean, we threw five passes in the first quarter and only completed one of them, but every single one of them was wide open. Every single one was wide open, and if we could have connected on three of them, we would have scored in the first quarter. So don't get frazzled, Grisafi. You know, you need to take the hit, throw the ball. You want your team to have a chance. It's going to be about you completing passes. Melissa Smith is going to run the ball. She's going to get her yards. You need to be able to throw the ball against Dallas' defense. That 3-4 stunted with, 47 walking up, and if you see 47 and 46 both walk up on the outsides, they're coming. Here comes the blitz. You better get ready for that check audible, check to a hot, you know, swing out a running back or something, because if those two outside linebackers both walk up, they're coming. They will switch into a 4-3 when you have started running on them. We were running pretty consistently on them. We just couldn't convert first downs. And then all of a sudden, they were in a 4-3. I was like, 4-3. And the 4-3 is actually a 6-1 because they still walk up those outside linebackers. And they're big. Dallas' defensive line is big. We are a very small team. We didn't have that much trouble blocking them. We just, you know, we were too tired to block them all game. So hopefully the weather is decent, that we can see a very competitive game between two great teams and deserving teams. Both these teams deserve to be there. Chicago's beat some really good teams, Detroit first, and then at the end of the season. First, they had to bookend their season with Detroit. That in itself is saying something. Then they beat Pittsburgh, who came over from a different league, saying, well, let's pick up another title. Well, guess what, Chicago? Here's your chance to say, not only did we beat the best team in the NWSA, we beat one of the best teams from the WPFL. So Chicago Force is not necessarily playing for the pride of the IWSL, but they have a chance to say, you know what, you joined our league. Welcome. And then Dallas is saying, you know what, we just made your league better by joining. So, I mean, I'm excited to see this game because it should be a very, very good game with lots of great athletes over the field. It's all going to be about who can execute their game plan the best, who can get done what they need to do and what they want to do, because, you know, as a coach, what you want to do is get somebody out of their game plan, get them into making mistakes. And if Dallas or Chicago starts making mistakes, I can see the home field situation being an advantage for Chicago. And I think that's something that they need to exploit. really get their fans pumped up in this game. I think they should, they will probably be on the opposite side of the field as they are the visiting team, which will work at an advantage because all those loud, rowdy people are only on one side of the field, and they're right behind Dallas. So I'm not sure if that's what I would be telling my management. I was like, you need to tell all of our fans to be at this game. They all need to wear our colors. They all need to have those loud, slappy things that get crazy and get Dallas out of their element because their coaches said it. When they're out of their element and are, you know, not saying unprepared, but just, you know, blah, they can be beat. So that's my breakdown of Chicago Forest versus Dallas. You know, I'm excited to see both these games, and I look forward to announcing the Tier 2 game if I have to. So right now I'll be waiting for Coach Matt of the Western Michigan Mayhem to call in. So I'll start breaking down what I have from those teams. He wanted to call in later because he actually had practice tonight, and then he was having film, and he said he'd probably be getting out about 9:30 his time. He is of Central Coast time. So it's about 9:45, so hopefully he'll be able to call in. I gave him, or maybe I didn't give him the number. BJ, if you're listening, could you call him and give him the number? Because I think I forgot to text him the number. Oops, that would be my bad, but I did have a lot on my plate today, so I didn't have a championship game to prepare for. I had three to prepare for. So let's break down H-Town and Western Michigan Mayhem. Now, this looks like a very, very interesting game. And like I said in my first show, I am not a follower of the NWFA. The only team I followed in the NWFA was the Amazons because they're right next to me, and I've known Duncan forever, and I've always followed the Amazons. You know, we started off when I was coaching the Aftershock. We used to just kill them all the time, and then, you know, his team kept on getting better and better, and then the last year that we played each other, he beat us. So, you know, I have the utmost respect for Coach Duncan and what he's done over there with the Amazons. It's a very good organization, very well run, you know, I respect him and look forward to the day where our teams can play each other again without the hassle and politics of, well, we can't cross league things, all that crap. So let's go into the NWFA championship game, which is in Memphis, Tennessee. So check out their website, womensfootballcentral.com. And remember the links that I gave out earlier to wfbtalk.wordpress.com. You can find all the game day broadcasts on that website. BJ and Liddy's all set that up, and everybody has good links. So let's start with H-Town, since I want to let Matt really get into the Western Michigan part. H-Town, I actually saw in person. They beat the Amazons, and the Amazons were the best, second best offensive team in the NWFA this year. So for H-Town to do what they did to the Amazons on defense was pretty special. Yes, the Amazons hadn't played in forever, and maybe the quality of their opponent wasn't that good, but the Amazons were a very good team, and they proved that they could do something in the first quarter. H-Town makes very good adjustments on defense, and that right there is a testament of good coaching. And you can tell because when you look at their games, the scoring from the first half to the second half allowed is significantly smaller. So that means that H-Town is making better adjustments than the other team, and that's good coaching. Their head coach is Poppy. I'm not sure what he's more focused on, whether it's offense or defense, but him and his staff have done a great job getting their team prepared. They've had to travel three straight weeks now for the playoffs. I mean, they first were in – let me see this – they had to play the Lightning, OKC again, after splitting the series with them. Then they went to St. Louis, then they went to Amazon, and now they have to go to Memphis. So they're just a traveling bunch of people. So crazy. I will say this about H-Town. They are very fast. They hit hard, and they tackle very well. They play team defense. They run basically a 4-4 set. And they actually adjust freely. You know, it's not just a base 4-4. They will adjust based on what the team does. Now, if it's a close game in the fourth quarter, I think H-Town will pull it off because they've had, you know, I would say closer games, But they've had to do a little bit more fighting this year. I mean, it was only a 7-point game going into the fourth quarter against the Amazons, and they ended up scoring two more. They scored 47 points in the regular season in the fourth quarter. Let me see, was it 47? And then they scored 25 in the postseason. So 47 through the year and 25 in the postseason, whereas Western Michigan, they had only scored, let me see, they had actually gone into overtime. I didn't even realize that. The Mammoths scored 27 and 51 in the fourth quarter. But I don't put too much weight on that because they did have an 82-0 and a 76-0 and a 68-0. So I'm not really, you know, going to put too much weight on them in their scoring in the fourth quarter because those games are probably out of control, hopefully has a running clock, and, you know, none of it matters. But people to look for in H-Town. On offense, you got Racine McIntosh, number 33. She's a very good runner. Shanta Greenwood, number 22, very good runner. I would say she is probably the better inside runner, whereas McIntosh is an outside runner. She's kind of lanky, skinny legs, you know. She's a runner, runs straight up. She's going to put a move on you and try and beat you to the outside. Greenwood is quicker. She can move a little more in between people. Their quarterback doesn't really throw that much. Deborah Rush, especially in the game that I saw. I mean, I think I only saw one pass. I didn't check the stats for that specific game, but they just ran the ball, and they ran, like, the same four or five plays over and over because they didn't have to run anything else, which is funny because when you run the wishbone, the first play you start with is the dive. Boom, dive, carry out the option. Boom, dive, carry out the option. Boom, dive, carry out the option. I saw three, maybe four dives all game because when you're taught as a coach about the option or about the wishbone, first thing you got to do is stop the dive. And the Amazons did a great job of being prepared for the dive. Well, H-Town never ran it, and I don't even think I saw them run the option. They were running leads, and they were running sweeps. So I know they say they have more plays. And I know that people have seen other film on them and have said they do that every game. So we'll see if they're actually forced to reach into that playbook and say, you know what, let's do this. I know they did it at the Amazon game because they threw the Amazons off once. And that's how they basically pulled the game out is they said, you know what, they're stopping us, let's do something different. They did something different, then they threw a pass, and then the game was over. That was that quick, too. I mean, the girl can throw. I will tell you that. She just dropped back, nice five-step drop. She threw that ball on a rope. It was a beeline, perfect catch, tackles made. It was like a 30-yard pass completion, just like that. Happened within a blink of an eye. And, I mean, that pass looked like she was making a phone call with paper cups and a string. I mean, it was that smooth of an arc, and look, it was just nice. I was very impressed. I was like, oh, they're going to throw the ball. I was like, oh, what a pass. Great catch. That's the first down. That's going to throw the Amazons all off. So that was pretty impressive for me. I was quite liking that. On defense, like I said, they run a 4-4. They're fast. They're aggressive. Number two is who you want to look for. Number two, where's her name? I lost her name all of a sudden. Number two, Chris Guillory. Chris Guillory is a linebacker, and she has some energy. If she's hyped, that defense is hyped. She brings the energy on defense, and she is a live wire, I like to call her. So we'll see about that. Well, I only got like 7 minutes left in the show, so let me just delve into Western Michigan because I haven't heard from the coach yet. Understand if he's not able to call in. I just wanted to give him a chance because I haven't seen any film. Talked with him today, and I was telling him, you know, listen, I want to give you the chance to come in and call your show because I want to be able to, you know, talk about your defense and offense, and, you know, and I haven't seen any film, so this is what I found out about you. And he was like, well, tell me what you think. And I broke down what I had, you know, not found out from other coaches, but broke down from film and stats and all that fun stuff. And he's like, wow, that's pretty close. So, big thing is, Jennifer Plummer, she's their star. She is not playing. She is injured. Coach is on, so I am going to get him to unmute. Coach, you there?
Yes, sir. How are you doing, Coach Penn?
Oh, I'm good. I'm just getting into you. Perfect timing. Just going over, Jennifer Plummer, your star linebacker slash one of a plethora of running backs. She's done for the season. She hurt herself. She will be on the sidelines, though, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Good to hear that, you know, the injured players can always make these championship games because they are part of the team and deserve to be there. One of the things I've noticed about your team, you're the highest scoring offense in the NWFA. So something to be very proud of. It's funny because you're the highest one from your league. Dallas is the highest one from our league. So it's good that both of those teams made it because it's offense puts people in the stands, so hopefully both games will get a good turnout, and then defense wins championships. And you don't have a shabby defense either. Your defense shut out, let's see, who was it? Philadelphia Phoenix, who, what, was the third or fourth best offense in the NWFA?
Yes.
Yeah, I looked at that and I was like, holy cow, I didn't know Philly was that good. And then Philly had only allowed 8 points all year, and you scored 21 on them. So very nice there. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
All right. So what are the keys to securing a victory for you? I know you have a lot of running backs, and you line up in a double tight formation. What kind of running back sets do you use? Because I told you I couldn't figure those out. Do you line up in the I, or are you more of a split back?
Well, we run a pro set split back. We run an I formation. We run a single back formation, and we'll empty the backfield too. I mean, you know, obviously you got to have balance. So,
oh, yes.
You know, while we do have a nice array of running backs, you know, you got to mix it up. You can't let people just believe you're going to do one or two things. You can't allow people to key on one certain formation. I mean, balance is huge.
Balance is huge, and as I'm looking over your stats, I was like, they've ran for 1,500 yards this year, and they've thrown for over 1,000. I mean, you're the first team that I've seen that's that close to balance. I mean, most of the teams, as I mentioned previously on the show, is that, you know, most of the teams are running teams, you know, and you are a predominantly running team, but you're not the 75-25% or the 80-20. You're more of like the 60-65 to, you know, 35, maybe even down to 30%, because that's a really good ratio balance right there.
Well, you know, we've actually tried, Coach, to even that out even more. We just have really struggled with catching the ball, delivering the ball. We obviously, we have a rookie quarterback.
Is that Jody Marquardt?
Jody Marquardt's first year playing the position. And, you know, I mean, a lot of kudos to her because she has come under fire all year long with a lot of blitz packages. And while her completion ratio isn't, you know, where we'd like it to be.
Well, 47% isn't bad, so, you know.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, we wanted to, and, you know, from the very beginning on January 5th, we really focused and talked about balance. And making sure that, you know, defenses around the league cannot just line up and try and stop you with one or two people and say, hey, look, we got to stop this or we got to stop that. You know, we want you to respect us up and down the line.
Well, I mean, and I want to congratulate you not only for making the championship game, but for doing it in that manner because looking at your website, you guys' website's well-balanced. There's lots of contact information. Your team actually was very good at getting back to me and though you didn't send me a DVD, you had every intention of it, and I appreciate, you know, that right there. And to do what you've done this year against Fort Wayne obviously is a very good team. You've had to play them tough, you know, twice. And then after you just killing the Vixen, you had a tough game with them. And then in the playoffs, you've just killed people. I mean, I'm, you know, 31-7, 34-7, 21-0. I mean, that says something that you're not about offense. So I'm very impressed with that. On defense, you run basically like a 5-2. How do you see that figuring into going against the Wishbone?
Well, you know, I mean, we have a ton of respect for the Cyclones. They're very talented. They're very big up front. They've got a lot of speed. And, you know, on the football field, speed kills. And
yes,
so, you know, we have to respect that. We have to try and corral that. Obviously, nobody's done it very well against them this year. And so we're going to work hard on that. And, you know, defensively, yeah, it's been our forte. We've really gotten after people. We try and work really hard at being great tacklers, being fundamentally strong, and, you know, bringing the physical aspect to the game. And, you know, our ladies have really stepped up and done a great job in the playoffs.
Well, that is great. You actually have done a great job this year. I congratulate you again. Good luck this weekend. The H-Town Western Michigan game, I expect to be a very good game because it is two very good teams. One I have seen in person and just by reading all the stats and have after talking to you some earlier today in the past week, you have a very good team, and I have a shirt that actually says it, hard work pays off. So here's hoping that all your hard work by you and your ladies have paid off. Okay, Coach? So good luck this weekend.
Thanks, Coach. We really appreciate what you do, and thanks for having us on, bud.
Well, you're very welcome. Show's about ready to end. I actually used every single second I could, so thank you for listening to Third and Long with Coach Penn. I will talk to everybody next week. Everybody enjoy the championship weekend, and be safe.
Thanks, man. We'll look forward to talking to you again.